everybody. Welcome to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Skyfall by my favorite secret agent, Agent 00J Bones. JB?
Everything I touch turns to excitement. Dun 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 dun.
You can find our website at fthismovie.net. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
And I sing or hum or whatever the hell I'm doing this with such conviction because tonight I was made to feel 12 again, and all of the columns that we've been publishing about Bond make me feel like I'm 12 again. And this is interesting because Mendes, Sam Mendes, good director, unluckiest son of a bitch in the world, he had
Kate Winslet.
Yeah. He was married to one of the most desirable women on the planet, and he let it slip through his fingers.
Yeah.
He gave an interview to NPR. You can find it online, and it's brief. It's about 7 minutes long, and he at one point he said, at the risk of being pretentious, he quoted this famous person, who I don't remember, and he said that all of us, through art, are trying to get back to the thing that first opened our 12-year-old hearts to the possibilities of the world.
Wow.
And that for him, one of those things was James Bond.
Yeah.
And I like how nimbly we skipped from Scary Movie Month, which, by the way, I've been trying to escape.
Yeah.
And like Al Pacino in the third Godfather film, you, Mr. Bromley, keep pulling me back in. I just want October to be done, and then there's another podcast to spill over, and there's another, there's a couple things we haven't gotten through with. So I thought skipping from Scary Movies to James Bond is like, oh, I don't have to be an adult till December.
Yeah, which it's great, but at the same time, it's switching booze for drugs. It's like I dove way too deeply into this one thing and then immediately flipped a switch and have watched really nothing but James Bond.
Way too deeply, although, and this is the last thing we will say no more of this. 1,000 posts on the Scary Movie Challenge.
Yeah.
And I'm not involved in patting myself on the back because God knows I'm too large of a man to actually reach, but I predicted it.
You did. You did. I predicted that there would be a new James Bond movie, and I was right also. So let's make this about me. Before we talk about Skyfall, which we're going to do spoiler-free for a little while, and then we'll get into spoilers for those of you who hopefully went out and saw it this weekend. JB, have you seen anything good lately?
I have.
All right.
I went to see Seven Psychopaths.
Okay.
On the recommendation of my son, and it's very, very good.
Okay.
Not great. It's a little bit too self-conscious, and there seems to be an attempt being made to sort of save Christopher Walken's career, but it doesn't work because I just sat there and I remembered when he wasn't ironic and when he wasn't a Saturday Night Live parody of himself, and I'm thinking you've gone too far to go back. But I thought there were things going on in that film that we should give credit for. Boy, that's a convoluted way of saying that. that we see so many bad movies when one of them is at least honestly trying to do something. I don't want to say different because it's not different at all.
No, not really.
Oh, you saw it.
I did.
And there were parts of it I really liked. There's some parts that really make no sense.
Yeah.
In terms of the structure that the film itself sets out to do.
Yeah.
And that little twist at the end to get the last story to jive.
Which I really didn't like.
The whole thing about the monk.
Oh, no, the monk I actually liked. I not to spoil anything, Christopher Walken has a long monologue that I actually kind of liked. I thought you meant the sort of post-credits tag, which I really didn't like.
And, well, I liked it only because you get a little bit more
Tom Waits.
Tom Waits, and I love Tom Waits. But interestingly enough, in the audience I saw it with, it must have been people thought they were double parked or something because they laughed and missed that.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked the movie. I didn't love the movie. It sounds like my opinion was sort of the same as yours. There would be things that were great and scenes that were great or lines of dialogue that I really liked and performances that would be really...
And, of course,
really...
Sam Rockwell's in it, and usually that alone.
I liked Woody Harrelson. I mean, I liked...
Woody Harrelson does very interesting work lately in these little character parts. Very quickly, though, and this might be more evidence that it's good, not great. I stupidly went to see it late Friday night. This I had to be a week ago. And that was dumb because I have this pesky little thing I call a job. And I went to the movie, and it started, and I promptly fell asleep. I slept through it until a very loud car explosion woke me up.
Okay.
You know, out in the
desert. Yeah. Okay.
And then I was ashamed, and I went home. And the next day, Saturday morning, I went back to the theater and paid again.
Did you really?
And then I actually saw it.
Did you sleep the whole way through until the car explosion? Oh, yeah. Oh wow. So you really missed.
Oh, yeah. And maybe it was just the theater I was in. That car explosion was really loud.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Loud enough to wake up the slumbering JB.
I had some parents with maybe their 12-year-old son.
Inappropriate.
Yeah, they made it to around the Tom Waits story, and then they walked out.
Yeah.
Because the movie is very violent. To a point, I mean, it's sort of trying to make a point about movie violence.
Yeah.
And it is almost exaggerated to the point of being cartoony, but it's very violent. I think part of it is I'm a little fed up with this sort of meta movie that...
Yes.
And then in movies, they do this, and then you're supposed to be tickled when this movie starts to do that.
As we watch the movie about these people... The main character is writing a screenplay called Seven Psychopaths, and that was my biggest problem with the film, that it seemed to have been written by a precocious film school student,
right.
That it had so much of that
right.
meta stuff, that it was very hard to get anything out of it sincerely.
And I liked Martin McDonagh's first movie, In Bruges, a lot, and I really wanted this to be In Bruges, and... It's not quite.
And I love the cast, though. You had mentioned Woody Harrelson when you talked about these idiots bringing a 12-year-old. I was reminded that Harry Dean Stanton is in the film.
A lot of people show up for just a little
scene. It's always nice to see him.
Yeah, definitely. And the way he's used is very clever. Anything else besides Seven Psychopaths?
No.
Just some James Bond. I've got out to see... The Man with the Iron Fist.
Oh, wow.
Which, again, good, not great. I wanted to like it more than I did. The rumor is that the initial cut of that movie was 4 hours long.
The trailer really made me want to see that.
Yeah. It's almost as good as the trailer would suggest. I don't want to say that I want to see the four-hour version of this movie, but the first hour, roughly, feels like... The Cliff's Notes of the four-hour version. It's this very sort of patched together, almost montage of these characters, and this happened, and it's all sort of covered up by voiceover, and it's problematic. And then in the second half, things kind of click together, but...
Sometimes voiceover is our first clue that
right.
this has been played with.
Yeah. I would compare it to, like, Machete, sort of. It's like, that was... kind of fun, kind of good, but not quite as great as I wanted it to be, you know what I mean? Like
that was goofy fun for a film that was made to satisfy people, the five people who really like yeah, Grindhouse.
Right, exactly. And that's kind of what this was. And I also saw Flight, the new Robert Zemeckis movie, which you did not see.
Well, see, I wanted to see it, but a certain spouse was in Japan,
yes.
And a certain spouse was promised that another certain spouse would wait.
Got it.
And I think you had mentioned Flight on a comment post
yes.
or a blog yes. spot Twitter thing. Man, I think of all the films this year, the trailer made me want it. That was a really good trailer.
Great trailer. Better trailer than a movie, I thought. And I'm a little bit in the minority. I think people seem to really be liking it. Denzel Washington's performance is great. I did not care for just about anything else. Part of that is my own baggage. I'm not a fan of movies about addiction. And that's just me. And this movie is about that. And maybe I'd seen the trailer once. That was the extent of the marketing that I was exposed to. So I really thought it was a movie about a guy who did this amazing thing, and was it the plane broken, or was he drunk, and which is it going to be?
And again, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
That's the movie I was being sold.
Yeah.
And that, to me, seems fascinating.
Yeah.
Because movies so seldom deal with ambivalence.
Right.
Well, what if that allowed him to do this
right.
magic thing? Now where do we stand right. on this issue?
The movie touches on some of that, but it's much more about Denzel the drunk. Really good performance, but he's always good. And the rest of the movie kind of let me down. Some really odd shifts in tone and some really obvious choices on the soundtrack. And again, you know, Robert Zemeckis made Forrest Gump, and there was nothing subtle about the Forrest Gump soundtrack, but at least it was, hey, we're in this period. And
I read a review where he was really taken to task for, I believe, the song we hear when John Goodman shows up for the first time. It's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
That?
Okay. Yeah. There's a few of those.
What the trailer reminded me of, and I need to revisit it because I haven't seen it in a dog's age, but I thought it might be a good unsung column, is the Jeff Bridges film Fearless.
Which I've never seen.
Which it's been a while.
It has a really good reputation.
The first time I saw it, I was like, well, this is terrific. We've never seen a film that brings this up.
Yeah.
Fearless is about survivor's guilt.
Right. Yeah. And it has a great reputation. I've just never seen it. So
I remember for the longest time I was boycotting the Laserdisc. This is how long ago this was.
All of America boycotted the Laserdisc.
I was finally on the winning side. Only I had 500 other Laserdiscs. I was just boycotting one. The film was widescreen, and the Laserdisc was cropped.
And they would do that every once in a while.
And it was like, come on, baby, this is why I bought this thing.
All right, so we're going to talk about James Bond, Skyfall. I've watched a bunch of Bond movies lately, and if you haven't been reading, go to fthismovie.net. A few of us have been writing about some of our favorite Bond movies. JB wrote a great list of 50 reasons why Goldfinger is his favorite.
Although, in the interest of full disclosure, the original idea was 101 reasons I love Goldfinger. I started writing it, and I was like, what was I thinking?
51 of them are Pussy Galore, that's fine.
I could have done that.
And the other 49, or the other 50, are the character Pussy Galore.
But I was just telling Patrick that to get ready for Bond today, the new Bond, I rewatched You Only Live Twice last night. And that's a problematic film.
It's we were just talking before we pressed record, and we were talking about From Russia with Love and Goldfinger. And you said...
And I'm hoping this insight is original to me, because I'm really, really proud of it, that Dr. No is sort of them sticking their toe in the water, and it was made on a very low budget, and that one's actually really close to the book.
Yeah.
And it's very British, and it's sort of the first attempt. But then after that, and Dr. No was popular, you see the filmmakers try two different approaches, From Russia with Love, which I love, and Goldfinger, which I love even more. And it seems like those films define the crossroads. Do we take it in this direction? Do we take it in this direction? And clearly they chose Goldfinger. But a case can be made that the entire series would have been better off if they had gone the From Russia with Love route. And it seems to me, and now this insight isn't original to me, this is something my son, who is very, very smart, said, that it sort of comes down to the dichotomy between grit and drollery.
Yeah.
And that with From Russia with Love, clearly we're going for grit. And on the Goldfinger side, it's a little bit more cartoonish and a little bit more droll. That maybe as a series, all of the James Bond films would have been better off if they had gone with more grit, like From Russia with Love. Although, lately, I find fault with some more modern James Bond films because they do go more on the grit side, and they lose that sense that this also has to thrill a 12-year-old.
Right.
A 12-year-old should be able to watch this right. and go, I really want to be James Bond.
Right. Well, and we've made the point more than once, and the whole reason for me getting to that point was You Only Live Twice takes all the sort of silly stuff. You call it drollery. I call it silliness. And that's not a, I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Takes the silliness from Goldfinger and amplifies it times 100. I mean, You Only Live Twice is an Austin Powers movie, sort of minus the jokes.
Yeah, there's a shot at the end where Donald Pleasance sort of leaps out of this ridiculous little mining car and hits a button on the wall and then jumps back in like a clown and drives away so he can be in another movie.
All of the production design from the Austin Powers movies was just taken from You Only Live Twice. And again, all these different approaches have their appeal, and everyone has a different idea of what James Bond should be. And so I've been reading some best and worst Bond lists. We've been publishing our own, and some people have said, I can't believe you picked this and not this. And other people say, oh, I can't believe you liked this movie and not this movie.
I had told Patrick about the Slate list,
yes,
which sort of begins rationally, and then suddenly, oh, no, I thought like half of it was like, well, I can see his point. And then suddenly he starts stirring these issues. Is this a joke? Right. Do you expect this?
But again, everybody has a different. Yeah. So there's people that love the silliness, and those are the people that maybe are rejecting sort of the Daniel Craig Bond. I lean more towards the From Russia with Love sort of gritty side. I agree with you that there should be sort of a bigger sense of fun, which is definitely lacking from like Quantum of Solace.
But that's very hard to hit.
Absolutely,
and very hard to hit in one time period so that it still works in another time period.
Yeah, definitely. I was surprised on your list, you listed your least favorite, and one of your least favorites was For Your Eyes Only.
Yes.
Which is not a great movie, but I have always thought of the Roger Moore Bonds, I would put that, like, second.
And you may be right,
because it tries to go more in the serious direction, because his movies are so silly.
As I ransack my memory, I have such hatred for the entire Moore period.
Yeah.
And talk about From Russia with Love, the Goldfinger From Russia with Love dichotomy. I haven't seen it since the day it came out, but I remember seeing The Spy Who Loved Me mm-hmm. the day it came out and thinking, well, this is what this should have been.
Yeah.
Now, when you said For Your Eyes Only was the second best Moore.
The Spy Who Loved Me being the best of the Russian.
Okay, so I'm not misremembering that film.
No.
That it's far less silly.
Yes.
And there's something at stake.
Yes.
And more, I don't know, behaves like a human being.
Yes.
And I have no hatred for Moore as an actor. I think he was completely miscast, or maybe that's what we needed in the 70s or something, because he's a mannequin who makes bad jokes.
I started to watch A View to a Kill and actually had to turn it off. It was really, I mean, he was 57 when they made that. It's hard to watch. He's just too old for the part. So Spy Who Loved Me is my favorite of the Roger Moores. For Your Eyes Only, I think, is maybe the second. I will admit to having affection for The Man with the Golden Gun, not just because of Christopher Lee, but also because of Britt Eklund and Maude Adams, I think. Those two
are. Okay, well, that's completely.
But it's not good.
Would you agree about Moonraker?
Oh, Moonraker's the worst. I mean, Moonraker and Octopussy, they're awful. Awful movies.
And one year, Flashback Weekend, in a slightly earlier incarnation, back when it was in Park Ridge.
Yeah.
They used to have it at a hotel. Flashback Weekend is a horror and fantastic movie
convention. No, don't bring up horror.
That's held locally.
Don't say the word.
Before they moved to Rosemont, they had it at a hotel in Park Ridge, and they ran a bus to the Pickwick Theater, and they rented the Pickwick for the entire weekend and showed films on the big screen. It was like, look, we should keep doing this.
Yeah.
And I think Richard Kiel was the guest, because he does a lot of shows.
A lot of those, yeah.
But they showed Moonraker, and I got to see Moonraker on the big screen 10 or 15 years after it came out. That film's unwatchable.
It's horrible. There was a run there where, I mean, really, they could have ended the Bond series because it had been driven into the ground so much. And again, For Your Eyes Only, not to spend too much time on that, is definitely a reaction to Moonraker.
And I know that For Your Eyes Only has fans.
Yeah. There's a lot of bad stuff. There's that ice skater girl.
Yeah, that's the main thing I remember Oh, Lynn Holly Johnson, really?
Yeah.
Because Roger Moore in real life could be her grandfather?
It's disturbing.
This is creepy-bond.
It's disturbing. But it's interesting, every time they sort of reboot, and watching Skyfall, and again, this is only the third Bond movie with Daniel Craig, and we just had Quantum of Solace in, like, 2008, I think.
Yes.
So it's only been 4 years since the last Bond. I felt like they were already rebooting the series with Skyfall.
Skyfall has a very different feel, and I was sitting through it earlier today, and it made me think about the recent sale of Lucasfilm to Disney and the fact that Disney can now revive the Star Wars franchise. And lots of people on the radio were saying, well, maybe it'll be something like for each new film, they'll get a director to do his take on the material. And more than a reboot, I thought this was Sam Mendes' version of James Bond, which didn't bother me. But much like you said, For Your Eyes Only was an attempt to get back on track after Moonraker. I think clearly this is an attempt to do something after Quantum of Solace,
yes,
because I think most people really like Casino Royale.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
Which, again, was a reboot,
right,
because they had driven the series into the ground with Die Another Day, which is as bad as Moonraker.
Everyone loves Casino Royale, and then again, they take this turn to turn it into something else. Well, don't turn it into something else. Turn it into James Bond. But, yeah, and someone told me today that online, opinions of Skyfall have been crazy mixed.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard many negative opinions, but I've been trying to stay away from a lot of it. What I've heard more than anything is this is one of, if not the best James Bond movie ever made. And I think that's coming from people without much of a sense of history, or maybe people who aren't really big fans of the franchise.
Well, that makes me happy, because once I discovered that there were some negative Nellies online, imagine that, on the internet, there would be people
like
bitching. I'm driving home from the theater, and I'm trying to pretend that I hated what I just saw, and what would be the thing that I would hate.
Yeah.
And the only thing I came up with is that this film, to an obnoxious degree sometimes, is talking about the twilight of things,
right,
and what happens when you're in the autumn of this, and that maybe that would turn off some younger movie fans who want a gee whiz Bond and don't want to talk about getting old. I, however, am getting old. And this is the 50th year.
Yeah.
And I'm 50. So this is my life. And I kind of really enjoyed the fact that they brought it up. Although I would argue, the quibbler is nowhere to be seen, but I do have one quibble.
Okay.
Occasionally the dialogue is leaden when this theme comes up.
Sure.
Where were you? Practicing death. And there's another line that's just as, could it be a little bit more?
Well, I will admit to kind of liking the line, and this is probably along the same, when something about getting a hobby, and Javier Bardem says, what's yours? And Bond's response is, resurrection. I like that line.
No, and that's not the leaden one.
Okay.
And that being said, there's this sort of wonderful scene that I thought should have gone on longer, where Bond has to play word association with the psychologist.
Yeah.
And though his responses are a little bit overwritten, I really, really loved, because I love James Bond so much, murder.
Employment.
Hey.
And that's part of the reason why I like Daniel Craig's take on James Bond so much. While I won't say that his movies have been my favorite Bonds, although I've really liked two of the three. And again, it all comes back to what you like out of James Bond, because a lot of people like sort of Sean Connery's, he's got a little bit of a detachment, like, this is kind of fun. And for Daniel Craig, this is a crazy, he's like a shark. I mean, it's a job. He has crazy focus, and that's, I really like that take on the character.
And as I pointed out, and I think maybe this was in the comments section on one of the columns, Craig is not allowed to be droll because the scripts never allow him to be droll, because I'm guessing the filmmakers in 2012 or 2008 don't want him to be jokey.
Right.
But there's a way to do it where it wouldn't be jokey. I don't think.
I think they try and do more of it in Skyfall. The problem, I think, is that all of the lines that are supposed to be kind of funny aren't very funny. But I think it was lighter in tone or jokier, without ever being overtly jokey, than any of the past Daniel Craig Bonds.
One of the funniest things, and I don't think this is spoiling anything, because A, it's early in the film, and B, I believe this shot is not only in the trailer, but in one of the many product placement commercials that's also been touting the film. Bond affects the most crazy, circuitous way on earth to get onto a train. And when he jumps into the hole he's created, he walks forward and checks his cuffs.
It's the best.
Oh.
It's the best.
And that was very smart for them to put in the trailer, because it's like, that's James Bond.
I was going to see the movie anyway, but I mean, that would have sold me if I wasn't going to, because that's just the best. That might be my favorite moment in the whole movie, and it's in all the trailers.
So it's not just me who noticed that.
Oh my God. It's so great. So you liked Skyfall.
I loved Skyfall.
Okay.
I sat there, and from the first minute, I was 12 again, in the best way. One of the quibbles I've heard is people were upset that it didn't start with the gun barrel silhouette, which then becomes the circle that becomes the first shot.
Right.
But, and I don't think I'm spoiling anything, that is at the end.
Yes.
So, or could it be they finished the film and someone said, "Hey, Sam," and then...
Again,
anything
with a devoted fan base, you're going to have people who, we talked before about the people who are upset about the corrections on Dracula on the Universal Blu-ray. I mean, it's like...
That's not the exact recording of Swan Lake.
Everybody relax, and this thing has to evolve, and what I liked about Skyfall is, you know, and it's interesting that it is the 50th anniversary of James Bond, is that it really does try and sort of, as you said, even sometimes to an obnoxious degree, have one foot in the past and one foot in the future.
But I thought Skyfall really succeeded
at
one foot in the past and one foot in the present. I know in film study class for the longest time I would talk about dramatic structure. And, you know, in any fictional work you start with exposition and then you go up to rising action. And this is just freshman literature class and stuff. And then I always thought that in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you got this amazing opening sequence that it's almost like we're seeing the climax of the previous film they never made, and that Spielberg was using climax as exposition. You learn everything about Indy you need to know in that first 10 minutes. And it took me so long to realize that I wasn't using the correct historical antecedent, because James Bond has been doing that practically since the first movie. And if one of the reasons we like James Bond is that they have these amazing pre-credit sequences, would you agree that this is one of the best ones ever?
Absolutely. Almost, I won't say to the detriment of the movie, because I really liked the movie a lot. But I don't know that the movie ever tops that first 10 to 15 minutes in terms of just action.
My jury's out, but one thing I did think as I was watching it is that it seems to me you can divide the great Bond films from the mediocre Bond films by how many set pieces they have.
Sure.
And I'm not sure if the more successful filmmakers set out to say, okay, here's what Bond is. You have to have this and you have to have this. This film, and I say this as a compliment, I don't say it as a criticism, is designed as a series of set pieces.
Sure. Most of the James Bond movies, I feel like.
But see, that's what I thought was wrong with the Roger Moore films, that they sort of lurched from set piece to set piece, and that you had fewer of them.
Okay.
My jury's still out about whether the film never tops.
It's so great. I mean, it's...
Oh, it's something.
It's so great. And again, they make James Bond into this character...
And really, I don't mean to interrupt you, really exemplifies what you said earlier about Craig the Shark.
And that's where I was going. One of the things I liked so much about Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol last year was that it kept making things really hard for Tom Cruise, but he had to keep trying to the point where you get to the end of the movie and he just finally has to drive the car to the bottom of this thing because there's no other way to get down there in time. And this movie does that a lot for James Bond, where it keeps throwing things in his way, but he has to keep going.
And I was watching the film, and it made me think of two things. And here's two concepts that have never been put together before. Get ready, listeners. David Mamet and Van Helsing.
Interesting.
That in David Mamet's book, Bambi Meets Godzilla, he talks about Hollywood, but he also spends quite a bit of time talking about dramatic structure and what you have to do to make something into a drama. And if you've never read the book, you need to, because it's fantastic for six or seven different reasons, among them the fact that he goes on and on about how much he loves Galaxy Quest and actually uses Galaxy Quest as an example of one of these drama examples. Van Helsing, the misbegotten Hugh Jackman film, presents people who aren't real people because none of them have any recognizable shortcomings or anything, and so it's 2 hours of people being thrown against a wall. The minute I started to watch Skyfall today, I'm thinking this is really smart on their part to present Bond with limitations.
Mm-hmm.
He sustains an injury in the first 20 minutes that plagues him throughout the film, among other things, because that's why we go to movies.
Right.
And maybe one of the problems is, besides the fact that he played it so tongue-in-cheek, that Roger Moore was never in the movie enough for us to have any stake.
There were no stakes ever in a Roger Moore Bond.
He was smirking his way through this child's adventure, and when he fought, he was instantly doubled by a stuntman, which was noticeable.
And even the villain's plans were sort of so cartoonish that they were so removed that there was nothing ever. You could say, hey, the whole world was at stake, but no, it wasn't. Because there was no sense of danger to anyone, specifically Roger Moore.
And besides the fact that Bond is handicapped to a certain degree in this film, I also thought they did a really good job coming up with a sort of plot that felt like now, because so much of it relies on technology, of course, but also the idea that if you're a spy, by definition, you have to remain in disguise, or you have to, like the film keeps saying, in the shadows and stuff, and that if you're revealed to be a spy, your life is in danger, which I thought was interesting. But also, the fact that the film deals pretty explicitly with torture, which I thought was a very interesting subject to bring up in the post-Bush era, because clearly the villain is an example of what you get sometimes when you torture people, which brings me to a question.
Okay.
Javier Bardem
is
the villain in this, and I could never quite figure out what his name is because he's got two of them.
Yeah.
Should we just call him Silver?
I thought it was Silva, but...
Silva.
I could be wrong.
The rat monologue.
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
It starts to come up again too often.
Yeah.
And I didn't like when it came back again.
I don't like when it becomes a bon mot, but as I sat there watching it and sort of thinking, now is Bardem gonna prove that he's a great actor because he's played one of the greatest villains in movie history? Can he do it again and do it differently? That as he's delivering the monologue, I'm thinking, this is one of the scenes they're going to show in the future when they talk about Skyfall. But I don't think it was hidden or implicit. The film explicitly deals with it. When you torture someone, this is what you get sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. I really liked the scene with they have sort of one big scene together, Bond and Silva, and I really liked it. I would have liked to have seen more of them, but...
And I think if we talk about that anymore, I think we're getting into spoilers.
We'll talk more about it.
Because I wanted to ask you about that,
too. Yeah. We'll talk about it in spoilers.
Talk about it, this being a 21st century Bond film.
So Die Another Day ruins James Bond, and so we get Casino Royale, and we're all sort of reacting to, oh my gosh, this is so much better, because it introduces Daniel Craig, and there's a lot of great action set pieces.
They start going back to the books, because the man who cries tears of blood is from the book. The biggest thing I remember from Casino Royale is when he defibrillates himself.
Yeah.
That's terrific.
There's
that's
a lot
just,
of great scenes in that movie.
One of the best things I've ever seen.
And then we get Quantum of Solace, which is, again, a push in the wrong direction from Casino Royale. Casino Royale is sort of humorless and serious and gritty, because that's what we think we want now.
And Quantum is just generic.
And Quantum, but it pushes too far in that direction. There's no real villain. There's no real plot. There's nothing. And like I said, I don't know that Skyfall is necessarily an attempt to reboot again the way that Casino Royale was. But there does seem to be much more of a conscious attempt to say, what are these signifiers that we're used to in a James Bond movie? And I won't name what all of them are, because I think it would spoil some things, but that they want to include this. I don't think it's spoiling anything to say that this is the first Daniel Craig movie with a Q, that we get Q back in the mix.
And I really liked the way they did that.
Yeah. The car shows up and actually got applause in the theater I was in, which was kind of cool.
Okay, well, I actually thought that would be a spoiler, but maybe it's not. Again, because of where I enter the franchise, and I wrote about this.
Yeah.
When he opens that garage door, I thought my heart was going to stop. And my wife turned and looked at me, and literally, this is embarrassing, I went, oh. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was very fun to hear the audience applaud. And so I feel like Sam Mendes and the screenwriters really did sit down and tried to figure out to make a movie that I think works for people who could care less about James Bond. I think this movie would still appeal to them.
And some of the knowing things are pretty subtle, and I don't think people would get them. Which reminds me, I had a question for you. There's a sequence where Bond is sort of tracking this hired killer. Mm-hmm. And I'm forgetting where it is, because, of course, every Bond film is a little mini vacation where they take you to all. There's one shot when he's on the boat going to the island where everyone's cleared out, where it's like, oh, this is one of the reasons why we go. So it's fairly early in the film. He's tracking this hired assassin, and he's in a place in a big city where there's all these modern buildings.
They're in Shanghai.
Okay. With glass walls, and there's all this neon signage.
Yeah.
Am I just reading this into the film? Or did it seem like they designed a sequence where it's an action sequence where Bond is tracking this assassin, and it seems to be going on in front of a backdrop of a James Bond title sequence?
I had the exact same thought. I thought the whole thing was designed, it looked like a title sequence. I absolutely thought the exact same thing.
And I was sitting there going, you know, this isn't the most exciting action sequence I've seen, but the production design and whoever dreamed this up, this is really kind of cool.
I had the exact same thought. Yeah, definitely.
The title song sung by Adele is also very good and Bondy.
Yeah. Here's the thing, you know, again, I've watched... at the end of Scary Movie Month, one of our listeners, Brad Lang from Australia, who watched a ton of horror movies in October and posted about them, then finally watched Cabin in the Woods. And I don't remember exactly his 7-word review, so I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically like, this is the reward for watching horror for a month. And that's kind of how Skyfall felt to me after watching a bunch of James Bond movies, was that, oh, this is the reward, because we have all these little touches that pay tribute to the 50 years of James Bond that come before, but it's not just a movie that's trotting out James Bond's greatest hits. It's not just,
it's not
remember this, remember
nostalgia.
This. Right. It's not at all. It works as a movie. It works as a very sort of contemporary movie, but it has all these great little callbacks, and only a few times are the callbacks to me obnoxious.
I'm trying to think of one of the callbacks that would be obnoxious. One thing I thought was going to happen.
Yes.
That didn't, thank God. Because for about a minute, you know, you're watching the film and you're sort of playing a game with what the film might have been in your head because you're schizophrenic or something. near the end of the film, Bond goes back to this castle, and there's someone from his past who lives in the castle. And for just a second, I thought, what if they had gotten Connery to play that part? That would have been a mistake. I think that would have been what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
A little too hard of a nudge to the ribs.
Yeah.
The callbacks to Bond's past, which did you think were obnoxious?
I don't want to... There's one that really sticks out at me that I will get into when we get into spoilers, which we're going to do in just a minute. There was something else that I wanted to say before we got into the spoilers, and I don't remember what.
Have we mentioned how terrific this film was?
I think so.
And how entertaining it is.
Yeah.
And how you need to go see it. This is one of the 10 films this year that you need to see.
I agree. And and both of us actually saw it in IMAX, and that wasn't even necessarily a conscious choice on my part. It just worked out best for the time. And I don't know if it's a situation where the movie was shot 2.35, but for IMAX, they opened it up to the full. But it's pretty great in IMAX, I thought. The shot that you're talking about where they approach the island, there's some shots, again, near the castle at the end.
It just goes on forever.
Where the IMAX presentation
beautiful.
Actually really works. And again, the movie wasn't shot in IMAX the way that, like, The Dark Knight Rises was. But I think it's still worth seeing in the format.
I thought this was a film that would benefit from the bigger screen.
Yeah.
And also, I think part of my decision was, it's so rare nowadays that the IMAX screen doesn't have 3D in it.
Yeah, right.
Neither of us like 3D.
Yeah.
That I just wanted to see IMAX with no glasses.
Absolutely. I'm reluctant to say it's one of, or if not the best Bond movie ever made. I won't say it's the best Bond movie ever made. Maybe it could be one of my favorites. It's way too soon for me to say. I have to live with it longer.
I agree, but I will go out on a limb.
Yeah.
And next week I'll hit myself on the side of the head. I would argue right now, and maybe I'm still in the film's willing thrall, right now I would say it's one of the five best Bond films.
I think you might be right. I think it's certainly the best one since the 60s, I would say.
Yeah.
I think most of the best ones came out during that decade. So I do think it's the best one since then, probably. Okay, so now we'll get into spoilers. If you have not yet seen Skyfall, please go see Skyfall. Why would you want to miss out on it?
If you haven't seen it, shut it off.
Yes.
That being said,
yes.
What did you think of Javier Bardem's villain?
I liked him.
Yeah. I wasn't sure, because it took me a couple scenes to sort of, is this going to work?
Yeah.
But I think it did. Actually, there's one shot where they employ some CGI.
Yeah.
Which I wondered why the film needed that.
My feeling, honestly, and maybe I'm wrong, was that that was his gimmick. That was his golden gun.
Right, but if that's the case, you didn't need it,
right.
Which would actually argue that he did a good enough job
right.
with hair and makeup and costumes and things.
Right.
The scene I wanted to talk about, though, is the scene that you mentioned.
Yes.
He has Bond tied to a chair,
yes.
and we get the myth of the talking villain again, where yes. he's going to lay everything out. And unless I misinterpreted it...
You did not.
I believe this is... the first gay Bond villain.
Yes.
Not counting those two henchmen in... it's so obnoxious. I'm supposed to have an encyclopedic knowledge of James Bond, but it's way late.
Okay.
Mr. Squint and Mr. Harry, they're... Oh, it's in Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, and yeah.
They're hired by the bad guy.
Okay.
And they're constantly, isn't it a shame, Mr. Quint, that he met such a... And as the film goes on, you realize they're gay with each other.
Yeah.
Which the film kind of plays for stupid 70s laughs.
Of course.
But Javier Bardem is not only presented as being a homosexual, but suggests that he'd like to do James Bond.
Yeah.
In one way or another.
Yeah.
And then Bond says...
What makes you think it's my first time?
How are we supposed to interpret that?
My interpretation, and again, I don't think this is gay panic in any way. Perhaps we are supposed to interpret that James Bond has had gay sex before. Whatever. My interpretation
But in
was,
a way, that makes sense.
Sure. And maybe we just take it at face value.
that in all of his adventures, he's constantly betting people in the line of duty. They just have never shown that other one in a movie.
And maybe we are to take that at face value. My interpretation was that we've seen James Bond in a dangerous situation before at the hands of a female villain, and one of the tools at his disposal, one of his resources, is his masculine sexuality that he basically starts to seduce the villainess, you know, and that was what this was, that was, okay, this guy's into me, this is all I have right now, so I'm going to flirt back with him.
And it does work, because Javier quickly unties him and takes him on a tour of his nefarious lair. I thought Bardem was really trying to do something different, not only with the hair and the makeup, but also with the voice and things. And I thought all of that stuff about him wanting to get revenge against M, I thought that really worked as a nice plot. His mastery of computers, I thought that worked well and wasn't obnoxious or cartoony.
And it ties back into the theme, too, of you have to consider the consequences of the things that we are doing. And most James Bond movies have never done that, that these people are sent out to die, that people are killed in the process, you know.
And that's that nice callback to the opening 20 minutes, because M has to make a judgment call.
Right.
Which one can argue about, and in this case, a previous judgment call has resulted in this villain that we're now presented with.
Right. I thought he did a good job of not being crazy over the top and not being, like, too silly or trying to play for laughs. I think I wanted, and this is a nitpick, and most of my complaints about the movie, honestly, are nitpicks, so I recognize that, but there's a great scene, and it's in some of the trailers again, where Bond meets he sees the woman in Shanghai, and then he runs into her again in the casino, and they have their little thing. She's the B-girl, basically, the one who always ends up, she's the Maude Adams in Man with the Golden Gun, or what's her name in Goldfinger?
Shirley Eaton.
Shirley Eaton, thank you.
actually, that could be the name of a, if you think about it, really. Those puns.
Where she kind of builds up Javier Bardem in this way, where she says, you know, have you ever known fear? He says, yeah, of course. She says, not like this. And she builds up this guy who's really scary. And the movie takes a long time to even introduce Javier Bardem, which I really liked. I wanted even a little bit more buildup. That's all. That's a nitpick. But I liked where they were going, and when they are pulling up to this island, it's just like, oh my God, what is happening on this island? Who is this guy they're going to meet?
And she says that he did something and everyone fled.
Yeah.
And it's very effective. Talk about using production design. This is a very big place that used to clearly be inhabited, and now it's deserted. It's one of the better Bond villain lairs.
Yeah, well, right. Again, because it's sort of rooted in reality, but at the same time, larger than life. And that's a hard thing to pull off, because the Bond movies, again, kind of go from Russia with Love, very realistic, not For Your Eyes Only, You Only Live Twice, crazy, larger than life.
Yeah.
And this movie, again, kind of skirts the line in a good way. For the most part, it's realistic, but there's these little touches, like the villain who has his own crazy, destroyed island to himself. There was a thought that was plaguing me throughout the movie, and I wish I hadn't known this going in, because once I realized it, it was hard for me to focus on other things. Sam Mendes has said, and I didn't read the context of the quote or whether or not he elaborated on the quote, I just know that he said that one of his inspirations for Skyfall was The Dark Knight. And again, I don't know what he took from The Dark Knight or whatever, but to me, it is sort of that balance of, what's great about The Dark Knight is we're playing this basically realistic, except we have Batman and the Joker. And we're playing this basically realistic, except we have James Bond and a James Bond villain. So we have these larger-than-life characters working on this stage. But things started to creep in where I started to notice, oh, these movies are very similar, including the detour to Shanghai, where we have to apprehend a bad guy, and then the villain who allows himself to be caught so that he can there were all these beats that I was like, oh, these are very similar to The Dark Knight.
Maybe Sam Mendes shouldn't have given this away.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know that I would have noticed it otherwise. Again, it doesn't ruin the movie, but once I started to notice those parallels, then I became too focused on those.
And we certainly don't want every action movie now to become The Dark Knight.
No.
Because The Dark Knight was The Dark Knight. Before I forget, one thing I really liked, and maybe it's because my wife is a poet, there's a scene where M is called before this sort of political tribunal and asked to answer for this amazing security failure that they've had. And they finally give her a chance to speak. And part of her testimony is reading this amazing poem by Tennyson. And I thought that worked so well. And it might have been the music score underneath her, or it might have just been that it's Dame Judi Dench reading Tennyson.
Yeah.
But the poem that they chose really hit the mark about the decisions that these people make every right. day where lives hang in the balance.
And it's cross-cutting. Javier Bardem is about to barge in. Bond is trying to get there. And so, I mean, there's a lot, the music is working. A lot of things really worked in that scene.
It's so rare, though, that we get English romantic poetry in an action film that I wanted to savor it. Earlier you said that there was a callback to retro Bond that you didn't like.
Well, let me get this one out of the way. This isn't one that I didn't like. I'll get to the one I didn't like in a second. A big deal was made when the movie was in production because for the first time, James Bond wasn't going to drink a martini. He was going to drink Heineken because Heineken had paid tens of millions of dollars for the product placement. And it depressed me. Not that I feel like, oh, the martini is necessary to James Bond, but once we start sort of tossing out canon just for the sake of money, it's a slippery slope. So James Bond very obviously drinks a Heineken early on in the movie when he's laying on the bed with the girl, when he's in his self-imposed exile or whatever. And then later in the movie, somebody makes him a martini.
Yeah.
And they just hand it to him, and there's no shaking nuts. It's never actually called attention to, except that they hand it to him, and he says, perfect. And am I just being weirdly conspiratorial that he's not allowed to order the martini?
Well, I don't know what the Heineken contract looked like, but I know exactly what you're talking about, because we do see that weirdly coiffed bartender lady. We do see her make it, making it correctly.
She shakes it and hands it to him, right.
Before I forget, this is a big tangent.
Okay.
The other night, this was last night. It feels like a week ago. I'm watching You Only Live Twice, and at the beginning, he goes to get some information from Charles Gray, who hadn't yet been promoted to play Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever. Now he's just a minor functionary. And the Charles Gray character makes Bond a martini the wrong way.
Yeah, no, that's not... Oh, it is You Only Live Twice, you're right.
It's clearly obvious.
It's the opposite.
And by that time, that was well known. Yeah. I mean, that became a thing.
Yeah.
And Bond graciously says thank you, and it's fine. Every single time I watch that movie, maybe because it's not memorable, I think the mismade martini is going to be Bond's indication that Charles Gray is not really who he's supposed to be, which turns out not to be the case.
Right.
Although 5 minutes later, he gets a knife in the back,
yes,
which is the film's way of punishing him
for making the wrong martini.
Making the martini. It's shaken, not stirred.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah, and it's like stirred, not shaken, right? I mean, it's such an obvious line of dialogue.
And I just always assumed that Bond was being gracious and didn't want to be a prick.
Anyway.
What's wrong with you? Everyone knows my drink, asshole.
Didn't you see Goldfinger? The line, the callback that I didn't like was throughout the movie, Bond is in the field with another agent played by Naomi Harris, who I really like, and they have a lot of great scenes together. They have this cute little interplay, and that's one of the things that makes it feel more like old school James Bond, is that it lets Daniel Craig be a little bit more playful because he's got somebody that he actually likes, and they kind of flirt, whatever. Then we get to the end of the movie, and she says, I'm retiring from the field. And they come into this office, and I perked up a little because I knew exactly where it was going. And all I wanted was for her to sit behind the desk and then for him to walk into M's office. And the implication is there. We know exactly who she is.
And they took it.
But instead, he has to say, I never did get your name. Really? At this point, we don't have her name? And my name is Moneypenny. It's like, no. We got it, guys. You don't have to say the word. Even if you want to put a little nameplate on her desk, that's fine. Let us catch it.
And that really screamed reboot. The only thing I liked about it was it threw me back to the Connery films, and it made me wonder if Lois Maxwell, who played the original Moneypenny, had originally been an operative before she became M's secretary, that it kind of made me rethink the original films and said, well, maybe that was a conscious choice of hers to settle down, and maybe she had some adventures.
By the way, she also is still playing Moneypenny in A View to a Kill, which is 85.
Yeah.
And she looks about as good as Roger Moore. It's, you just want both of them to hang it up. And they did. So I like the idea of her as Moneypenny. I have no problem with it. I just didn't need them to say, my name's Moneypenny. Like, get it? It's that thing that I hate in all prequels where they just have to do all this table setting. But let's talk about the other thing that goes on in that scene. He goes into the office, and it's Ralph Fiennes, who is the new M. And for about half the movie, I'm sitting there wondering to myself, why is Ralph Fiennes in this movie? What function does his character serve? And then at a certain point, it becomes very clear where things are going. And I'm talking even before Judi Dench has her fate. But we're in spoilers, so we can talk about this. They kill Judi Dench in Skyfall.
And I thought that scene between her and Daniel Craig was very moving.
Okay.
I was moved. I was honestly moved by it.
I mean, I was too, because I like their relationship so much. And there's a lot of that in this movie, which I really like. She's almost the Bond girl in this movie.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I guess I don't see what function killing her off serves.
Well,
she could have also retired.
Again, and you had said this, that you hate when movies want to do something at the end. You originally stated this on the Network podcast.
Okay.
That I want to do this, and I think the only way to do this is to kill someone.
Yeah.
Judi Dench's contract was up. She didn't want to do it anymore.
And then
the filmmakers felt that she was too old. She does look very old.
Very tight. She looks very small.
Yeah. She looks very old in this film. But at the end, I thought, if they continue this, and I'm guessing they will, that Ralph Fiennes would be a fine M.
Sure.
And very much channeling the spirit of Bernard Lee, that he's going to be like that. But because I have a very overactive imagination, that scene at the end made me wonder if James Bond squared off against Voldemort, who would win?
I just didn't think they needed to kill her. I understand all the reasons for getting her out of the series, for all the things that you stated, but...
And from a dramatic structure point of view, given how much of the film deals with what do you do when you're in your autumn years and you might be, you're out of style and that time has passed you by, that was another way the film had of making a statement about that, because clearly this film's M and this film's James Bond are, and the film goes back to this again and again, they are old school.
Right. That you don't even need field agents anymore, that James Bond is basically a dinosaur. At one point, when I started to figure out, like, okay, Ralph Fiennes, they're going to make the new M, and I wasn't sure what they were going to do with Judi Dench, but it seemed like, okay, she's probably not continuing on as M, because very early in the movie they say, you know, you're out, you're fired, you have to resign. They introduce Albert Finney as a very unnecessary character.
Yeah.
And I like Albert Finney, but he doesn't need to be in the movie. I start to think, okay, so is M going to retire to this farm with Albert? Is he being brought in as, like, your old man love interest?
Oh, the minute Albert Finney showed up, I was like, please tell me you're not going to do this.
Right, and so we leave those two together, and James Bond goes back to work for Ralph Fiennes. I don't know. It's not the worst. I don't necessarily know what purpose it serves, and maybe it's the kind of thing that comes back in the next movie. Maybe this is something now that drives Bond.
Yeah, that we're going to have more stuff about his childhood. I actually thought that plot point stretched credibility a little bit, not that James Bond is shy about doing that. And as much as I like seeing Albert Finney, in the reality of the film, so you haven't been back here in 20 years, but there's a guy who's been busy shooting rabbits around the property. He's the game warden. Although I guess in one way that makes sense, because even though the castle is where it is, there's a lot of land that I'm assuming must be part of the estate.
Yeah, I did like...
That whole thing kind of reminded me way too much of Batman.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But again, I did kind of like, and I got to go back to Judi Dench in one second, but I did kind of like the reveal of what the title meant, because I kind of forgot about halfway what Skyfall's meaningless, and usually a character says the line.
And to show you how oblivious I was, yeah. I just assumed at the beginning of the film that it's that computer thing around the guy's neck. I thought that was Skyfall.
I thought it was going to be something yeah. like that.
Or that's what the mission was called.
Right. So then there's the reveal that it's actually the name of the Bond estate. And again, while I don't need the Home Alone sequence where they rig the booby traps and
I really like that, if only because all the booby traps were so old school yeah. and homemade.
Yeah.
My wife pointed out
yes.
that besides the fact that the Aston Martin makes a triumphant reappearance, there's an earlier scene with Q where he very derisively says, what were you expecting, an exploding pen? We don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
But that later, this Aston Martin turns out to have some of the most valuable weapons yes. that they have. So I like that.
That was another moment, one of those moments where I was like, all right, that's a little, they're pushing it. You know, like, I don't mind, what were you expecting, an exploding pen? Like, haha, wink, wink. But then we have another line where we don't do that sort of thing. All right, we get it, guys. You're the new James Bond. But I liked this idea that the title of the movie ties into, again, sort of going back to the beginning for James Bond. And I feel in so many ways that this movie is really trying to reboot things, which is fascinating because that's what Casino Royale was doing. And I don't feel like they got so far off track that we need a new launch, but so much of the movie is about going back to the roots of James Bond to the extent that the title is going back to his childhood.
And I'm such a fan of Daniel Craig in the role, and I know a lot of people have been getting very excited about the concept of Idris Elba playing the part. Craig's contract is for 5 films.
Yeah.
And I've read somewhere that he's not happy and doesn't want to do the next 2.
I've heard both.
And then I read recently that Sean Connery was very unhappy that something happened during the shooting of You Only Live Twice that really made him want to be done.
Yeah.
And it makes me want to go scouting on the internet to yeah. find out exactly.
Well, that's why they brought in Lazenby. Almost as like a bargaining tool.
Right, and, but I'm wondering.
Then Lazenby wanted out too.
So. I really want to see 2 more Daniel Craig Bond
yeah,
films.
Yeah, me too.
And as exciting as Idris Elba might be, I'm willing to wait. I would like to see 2 more Craigs.
Yeah, no, me too. And it's a weird thing. Like, there are, you know, when they brought on Pierce Brosnan, everybody's like, oh, great, finally. And then
no,
he kind of wore out his welcome. And then they announced Daniel Craig, and you're like, I don't know. And then Daniel Craig is great. I mean, every time there's this feeling of, no, let's stick with what we have. Although Pierce Brosnan kind of ruined his...
Well, it's like most things, that we get excited about something, and then it turns out it's the opposite. That Timothy Dalton is announced, and no one likes him, and now you look back, and you're like, oh, that was something.
Yeah, right.
They had... But yeah. Clearly, Craig must know how good he is at playing this character.
I think so, yeah. And I admire his commitment, because he really literally throws himself into the role. The other thing I wanted to say about Judi Dench was... It's going to be interesting because...
How hot you are for her?
Well, of course. She's very small. I saw some Bond movies in the 80s and 90s, and I've seen a couple of the Sean Connerys. But, you know, when I really started going to the theater to see the James Bond movies wasn't until the Pierce Brosnan ones. So Judi Dench is the actor that I connect to M.
She is M for you.
Yes. And I was thinking about it watching this movie that... And as I watch some of the older Bonds that M is played by Bernard Lee, that I think making M a woman was a masterstroke.
Yes.
Because so much of Bond is defined by his relationships to women, that having this other female relationship that's very different, that's very much employer-employee, but also mother-son.
The scene at the beginning of Skyfall where Bond shows up in her townhouse or condo or whatever it is, and Judi Dench is so funny in that scene. You're not staying here.
Right. That it's going to be an adjustment to see him. And again, I'm curious to see him go back to the relationship with Ralph Fiennes, but it's going to be very different. And I wonder if there can be the same kind of subtext that there is with Judi Dench. That's all.
Okay. Have we mentioned how much we loved every minute of this And even though we have some nitpicks and quibbles, I honestly can't remember having a better time at a movie all year more than this afternoon.
I think I would agree with that. Yeah. The movie that popped into my head while it was on was The Avengers.
There's some brain candy.
But I liked it better than The
Avengers.
There's
a lot of gee whiz fun.
Yeah.
Look at it this way in terms of how many bad Bond films there are. Really no major missteps. And no. That alone, wow, my hat is off.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Remember, you can always find us at fthismovie.net, which you already know, and you can email us if you want to talk about your favorite Bonds at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
The end of this podcast, but Patrick and JB will return in F This Movie Pussy.